Report for the TACNET.
Almost perfect, Paul. Tiny bit of hiss in the background. You're 98% audio, 2% hiss. Don't think you've got to move it. Just continue.
Okay, very good. Okay. We have, there were nine people up on the International Space Station, and three of them returned during the week safely. They left on a Soyuz vehicle and returned to Kazakhstan. That's where they land. They land on land. And that leaves now six on board. Now they're going to have quite a bit of work to do. They always keep them busy, but a lot of work is going to be done in the next 3 months. Out of the six, there's four of them that are equipped to do EVAs on the American side. That means the American spacesuits and using the Quest airlock. And they're going to be doing 10 EVAs. So they always go out in pairs. And the first five EVAs are going to have to do with replacing the nickel hydrogen batteries that are up there. Nickel hydrogen batteries, they were originally put up on the space station, you know, starting in the very beginning, and over 15 years or so, they start to degrade. They don't take the charge like they used to. So the process has been going on for a couple of years now to replace these things. Each battery, you know, each battery is the size of, you know, they say if you take a refrigerator and cut it in half, it's about that big, usually around 400 pounds. So they're taking out 12 this time and replacing them with six. They've done this in the past. Let me drop it. They've done the inboard sets of batteries. You know, the space station has one central fuselage going down the middle. That's where most of your modules are, where they all live. Pull them to a 10 or 11 room house. But going perpendicular to that, they have this truss section, you know, that's been built out, and the truss section goes as long as the football field. The fuselage section is in the middle. So they've done the inboard battery section, and now they're doing the outboard. The inboard meaning the first group of solar panels that you come to. There's four major solar panels on the space station, and you have the starboard side and the port side. The first one was the starboard side. They call it S4. That means the fourth truss section out. That was the first section that was done, and then they did the port of P4, or you know, that truss section. With a group of batteries. Each group contains 12 batteries. They take out 12 batteries and replace them with six brand new ones. Now, why do they do that? Because it's a 2-to-1 ratio. The old batteries are nickel hydrogen. The new ones are lithium ion batteries built in Japan. So the inboard ones are all done over the last couple of years, but now the goal is to do the outboard ones, the inboard ones. If you were to, let's say, if you were to lay out the truss section on a 100-yard football field, put the center in, zero, and then if you were to go out to, let's say, the from the 50-yard line, if you would go all the way to the very end, that would be the outboard truss section. So they have to travel, 150 feet or more to get to the outboard section. The robotic arm doesn't really quite make it that far. The robotic arm was very good, very helpful for changing out the inboard sections for the last couple of years, but now the robotic arm is going to be somewhat helpful. It will be attached they're going to attach an astronaut, speak to it, and that astronaut will be able to go pretty far. And then they'll have another astronaut that will work themselves hand over hand all the way out to the location. The B6, the truss section where the batteries are. They're going to have to disconnect the batteries and hand over hand, bringing the battery back and handing it over to another astronaut. Astronaut's going to bring it back and store it and bring the new battery out, and it's going to be going on back and forth. And that's why it's going to take so long. The previous batteries, when they would do, let's say, the S4 section, they did it like in 2 spacewalks with the help of robotic arms. This time it's going to take 5 spacewalks to do the change out of these batteries. But once they get done, they'll be 3/4 of the way done. And then next year, Japan will send up another group of batteries to do the S6 or the Starboard 6 section. And that'll be another deal similar to what's going to go on now. So I believe the first spacewalk is coming up in about a week or so, and then they're going to start one right after the other. And they run in pairs, and presently it's 4 people that are qualified. It's Christina Koch, Jessica Meir, and then you have two guys, Luca Pomitano from Italy, and the other American, who's also up there. So you have the 4 people that are qualified. So as time goes on, around the 4th or 5th spacewalk, they're going to have 2 women go out and do a spacewalk together. And that will make the news. I can almost guarantee none of these spacewalks I'm talking about, there's going to be eventually 10 in the next 3 months. We'll probably not make the news. They've had hundreds of spacewalks on the space station. And, you might find it in paper somewhere. But when the 2 women go out, that will be like big news, They tried to do that, actually, a year or so ago. But it didn't work out because they didn't have the proper size spacesuits ready for that type of deal. This time they do. They have 2 medium sizes, small, medium, and large, but they don't have all these spaces lined up there. It depends on who's coming up next, what manifest is, what's going on. And so happens there's a lot of medium sized people up there, so they're all equipped. So eventually that will make the news. So I said there's going to be 10 spacewalks. 5 to do out to change out the batteries, and then they've been working on a system to change or repair the alpha magnetic spectrometer, and that's going to require a lot of spacewalk to do it. And they've been practicing on Earth in the neutral buoyancy lab, big swimming pool where they test out how they're going to change out certain pieces of equipment. They do simulate the spacewalks as best they can in the water. Well, everybody on board has practice for this. But it's very detailed. It's similar to what went on with the one of the Hubble missions. Now, Hubble was basically surface in space, change out different things, change out batteries, change out gyroscopes. Some of the things were not made to change. Certain computer boards and certain power supplies were not really made to change out. And when they were doing the final service mission, they did 5 service missions to the Hubble, they ran into similar kinds of problems where they needed special tools and special equipment they worked on Earth. before they went up, and eventually they were able to succeed in doing that. This type of deal with this alpha magnetic spectrometer is going to be the same type of deal. Special tools. It's going to be very difficult to fix. Now, I'm sure a lot of people will say, what is the alpha magnetic spectrometer? I know Dick knows, and I'm sure a lot of other people might know it as well. But that's not a telescope, but it works the same idea as a telescope. But the idea is to catch cosmic rays. I know Roy gets mad when I say cosmic rays because they're really, you know, protons or positrons or electrons or subatomic particles that are flying through space. The idea is to see what they're doing and to find out where they came from. So the alpha magnetic spectrometer evolved from one that they sent up on a space shuttle all by itself, not even going near the space station. They called it the AMS-01. The one that's now permanently attached to the space station is 02. So what happened was they tested it out 10 days in flight on an early shuttle flight, and they proved out that this thing would work, that it would be able to not only measure the speed of the subatomic particles and cosmic rays coming through the through space, but they'd be able to find out where they're coming from. They'd be able to find out, you know, how fast they're going. They could tell, you know, is it a positron or is it an electron? And they did it with this contraption that they built. This whole setup cost around $2 billion. So right now it's broken. So you say, well, why don't they just take this thing and throw it away and put up another one? But it's a $2 billion piece of equipment. It took years to build. And it has pumps. It has these centrifugal pumps. There's like eight, I think there's eight pumps that pump carbon dioxide for cooling purposes. You know, an actual reciprocating refrigeration type of system. It has an evaporator, has a condenser, has an accumulator, you know, assuming that it's TX valve of some sort. But, you know, this thing was built on Earth for $2 billion. It's got all this piping, and it turns out the pumps are bad. It's been operating for years. It's been up there since 2011. I believe Endeavour was the space shuttle that brought it up. This is WS2S for IT. And they wanted to install it on the International Space Station, which was quite a job, by the way. They had a robotic arm that was attached to the space shuttle and another longer robotic arm attached to the International Space Station back in 2011. And when they got up there, one arm handed it off to the other arm, and the other arm attached it to the space station. And this is like a 5,000-pound thing, 6,000-pound piece of equipment. And it has all these magnets, and that's how they're able to figure out where these particles are going. I haven't really actually seen the magnet itself. I'm looking for pictures of this thing. Originally, they wanted to use a superconductive cooling magnet, but the cost was too much, so they did away with that idea. They would have gotten 20,000 Teslas out of it. Now I think it's something like 3,000 times stronger than the Earth's magnetic field. It would have been, you know, instead of 3,000 times stronger than Earth's magnetic field, it would have been, you know, maybe four or five times that with the superconducting magnet. So they decided, well, it's going to the space station. We're just going to leave it there longer, and we'll be able to get all our science out of it. You know, it's not like it's going to be put into space all by itself. It doesn't need any power supply. It doesn't need any data or radios or anything. Everything's going to be done and supplied from the space station. You have plenty of electrical power on the space station, plenty of radios, computers. But what they needed was this massive magnet. And this thing, they say it's a little over a meter in diameter, and a little less than a meter in thick. It's kind of like a cylinder. And it has 6,000 magnets, 6,000 small magnets, 2 by 2 by 1. And they're all neodymium, ion, boron magnets. Neodymium, super strong, ion, boron. It's like the strongest magnets going. And they're all glued together. They're actually epoxy together to form this whole setup around this cylinder. So if you were to go by, you dropped your screwdriver or something, it wouldn't get attached to the thing, even so it's got this tremendous magnetic force. It's inside, I think it's similar to a toroid type of deal. The magnetic field is on the inside. And they say, if it wasn't, it would act like a magnetic torque system that satellites have. Sometimes you'll have it at the on the end of a boom, and that magnetic torque, electromagnetic, would come on, and by energizing it and reacting with the field, the satellite would turn a little bit one way or the other. If that was true, if this thing didn't contain its magnetic field, the space station would constantly have to be adjusted. It's an interesting magnet. Anyway, well, let me drop it. They went with a permanent magnet design, and it can sense the subatomic particles as they're flying through space. Now, they come from all directions. It'll go right through the thing. If you didn't have an alpha magnetic spectrometer sitting there. If you just had a cylinder, the cosmic rays would be coming from the north to south, through the Earth, one way or the other. So that there's no information that they can gain from that. But by having this magnetic field on the inside, as these subatomic particles are coming through, they're being deflected by the magnet. And for instance, if it's a positron, it will get pulled one way as it goes through the detector, or an electron will go the other way. And by knowing that and knowing what's happening with these particles, they could tell what kind of a material is going through this machine. They could also tell how fast it's going. They have a special detector on the top and one on the bottom. They just time how long it takes to get from the top to the bottom. They also have 8 detectors all the way through it, stacked. And so they could, from that, they could get information of, how fast they're going by doing that. And how much, because it's being deflected, they can get all the science information out of it that they need. They also have another setup that actually, it'll detect something coming in from the side, and it'll reject that. What they want is they want to just know which ones are coming in from the top. They don't want to know about the side, because that would just confuse everything. So the ones that are coming through the top, so say they get a reading of, thousands or even millions of these particles going through, they want to know what's coming in from the top. On the very top of this machine, they also have star trackers, two different star trackers. In case one is being blocked by something, the other one will work. So the star trackers let them know which way the alpha magnetic spectrometer is pointing. So all this stuff is recorded. They said it's like countless computers. I don't know how many computers are in this thing. And then transmit the information down. I think it's like 60 different computers inside doing the processing. And now, this tracking unit part of it, the one with the 8 different layers, that needs to be kept very cold. So they have this carbon dioxide system with these pumps I talked about before. With this refrigeration type of system. And they need to cool the very inside of it. They say it gets up to 140 watts of energy on the inside. They need to get that down. Everything's got to be down to 3K or below. And with these pumps, they've been doing it no problem. Like I said, went up there in 2011. But as the years have been going by, some of these pumps have been failing. And they're down actually to the very last pump. And they want to get some kind of science out of it. So they use it intermittently. They feel that, you know, the space station isn't oriented the way they need it at the time. They shut it down and they turn it on intermittently. So the goal is for this space, these spacewalks, these 5 spacewalks that are going to be coming up, is to change out the pumps of this whole system. But to do that, like I said, this thing was never meant to, you know, be torn apart and serviced in space. So the cost of it, it's worth it. So to put it back into operation, they have these new pumps. I'm pretty sure it's 8 pumps. It might be 6, but nevertheless, it's a lot of pumps. There are 8 different pipes that run through the machine. And the guy was describing this on the news conference, not that a news conference. And he was saying that the pipes are probably about a half an inch in diameter. But the problem is, it wasn't meant to be serviced, so they all look the same. They're all the same color. In fact, they're all silver. And they're all ganged together. They're all bundled together as they travel through this machine. You have to reach way in. They're like stuck in a cubby hole. So, they have to make up special tools and everything. And they actually want to cut these pipes, individual pipes, and tap into them. Actually, eventually have to change out these pumps, and then they're going to have to reattach all this piping. They're going to have to go through a pressure test, and they said it was going to go down to 10 to the minus 4 vacuum, so I'm not sure what that translates into PSI. Nevertheless, it's a big difference. It's going to be a tough pressure test. Make sure nothing leaks after they're all done. Like I said, it runs on CO2. They do get the CO2 down to a liquid where eventually it acts as a refrigerant. It goes through the evaporator core, cools down the 140 watts that they need to do, and eventually goes to a condenser. They have these two evaporating things. If you look at the machine at the top, they have these two rectangular pieces that are near the top and that's used for the cooling. This is all going to have to work. So that's the deal with the alpha magnetic spectrometer. I'll be following this thing left and right. It's not going to be exciting to watch for I guess most people because they're going to be in one position the whole time, not translating from one part to the other. Once they get there, they're going to be there. They'll be there with their toolkits. But if you know a little bit about this and you know some of the terminology that they're using, it would be quite interesting. They'll be talking about the transition radiation detector. That's the one that has all that needs this cooling system. There's going to be the upper time of flight counter, along with the lower one. That's the one that's near the top and near the bottom. That's going to measure the speed through. mean that the Star Trek is, they're going to determine the orientation. They're located on top. They'll be talking about them. They'll be saying, watch out for that. Don't break them things off. There's the silicon tractor, which measures the coordinates of, where these things have come through. Then there's a ring imaging Cherenkov, the detector as well. It's supposed to be this lead plate. I'll have to read more about that, which is lined with these sensors on the inside of it that detect another type of cosmic ray that's coming through the machine. Anyway, that won't be for a while. The first spacewalks are going to have to do with the battery changeouts. And like I said, all 10 spacewalks will probably be taking place over 3 months, unless there's delays or something. Then, of course, they'll go out, to a longer period of time. So that's it. Any questions or comments on the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer? I'm looking for more information myself, so if anybody knows about these things, let me know. Okay. The battery topic is going to be one I'll follow. I've done that here on the net before on the inboard battery changeouts. Now we're doing it on the more difficult area. Batteries were brought up by the HCB vehicle from Japan last week. They had a busy week up there, or actually 2 weeks ago now. The HCB was launched by a Japanese rocket, the H-2B, specifically built for sending the cargo vehicle up to the space station. And as that was in transit before that docked with the space station, they had the launch of 3 people from Kazakhstan. That made 9 people up there. Then right next day or so after that, the HDV birthed, actually, they birthed with the Harmony module, and they were able to unload everything. Plenty of thousands of pounds of supplies and everything for the astronauts, including, I think, another spacesuit. And eventually the robotic arm will be taking these big batteries out of the HTV machine. The robotic arm has already broke loose a lot of the batteries on the platform on the where they're able to get ready. It'll be a lot easier for the astronauts if these bolts and everything are loose. So they've been doing work on that. Alright, on to another topic. This is WS2N. Okay, the Starliner is getting ready for a test in New Mexico, White Sands, New Mexico. Boeing has this contract with NASA to build a spaceship that will carry up to 4 people. Could actually probably carry 7 if they wanted to, but it will carry 4 in the beginning. First flight will eventually happen early next year. It will be 3 people. But they'll have the capability of bringing 4 up to the International Space Station. And we're looking forward to getting away from all these Russian launches that we put up with since 2011, since the end of the space shuttle launches. And Boeing has a Starliner being built. Actually, they now have 3 being built. They're in the process of being built right there in Florida. In one of the buildings that the shuttle used to get ready, shuttle processing building. Of course, the shuttle's gone now, and Boeing has taken over. And it's a factory. I see pictures of it. You have different Boeing vehicles in different times of completion. Well, the first one that they're not going to use is going to be for a test, not for manned flight. They still have to do one test. Boeing has already done an in-flight test, for an abort test, put, you know, launch on a rocket, vehicle separates, they replicate the idea of an abort. They all always have to do two tests, in-flight abort, and then one from the ground, as if they're sitting on a booster. They're going to do this test from New Mexico. They have a stand that's going to duplicate being on the boot on the top of an Atlas V rocket, which they're going to be launching from, and they're going to see if this Starliner can, you know, ignite its four abort engines. Liquid, they have a liquid fueled engine, and you know it's going to ignite and give them 40,000 pounds of thrust and see how fast or how good it gets away from the booster sitting there in White Sands, New Mexico. And with that, they have about 50 thrusters, different size thrusters all over this spacecraft, the Starliner. And four of them will initially light to push away from the booster, and then the other ones will start activating. Some of the thrusters are going to come on. Eventually, when it gets up a couple of miles, it will turn the vehicle where you have the blunt end going down first. This way, you'll be able to pop the door open. This all happens automatically with the parachutes coming out, a series of parachutes, drogue parachutes, and then eventually the mains come out. And as it's coming back down, you know, about 4 miles up, 3 or 4 miles up, it'll be coming down. This all happens within like a minute or two. So it'll be a quick test. NASA will show it on TV. And we don't have the date yet, but my guess is coming up probably within about a month. And then as it's coming down, it's going to release the... they have a service module type of thing on the back of the spacecraft, and that's going to go. And then that exposes the heat shield. And as the parachutes are bringing it further down, the heat shield separates, and that exposes half a dozen of these big airbags on the bottom. That's going to land on the ground. And then more or less right before landing, these big airbags are going to inflate. And between the parachutes and the airbags, that will soften the landing for the make-believe four astronauts that will be on board. So hopefully that goes all, you know, goes good, because if that does, Boeing will be set to launch a crew right after that. And they already have their crew ready and training to go up on the first Starliner flight by Boeing on the top of an Atlas V rocket. It'll have two solids on it to launch from Launch Complex 41 in Florida, and it also has the two rockets for the second stage. All the Atlases that have been launched so far have only had one. This will have two Centaur liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen rockets sitting on being used for the second stage, and that will get them to the International Space Station. So, any questions on Boeing? I mean, this is their competitor is SpaceX. SpaceX has a similar type of thing going on with the Dragon. It's weird with the Dragon has done things in reverse. A couple of years ago, back in 2015, they did a similar launch, an abort launch from the stand, in this case it was down in Florida, where the Dragon, you know, took off all by itself, flipped over, parachutes open, and that thing eventually landed in the water, and that was approved. But SpaceX hasn't done the in-flight abort system yet. They've yet to do that. So right now in Florida, they have the booster that they're going to use. And usually all their boosters are reusable. In this case, it won't. It's duplicating a booster that's supposed to be failing. And that will just wind up in the Atlantic Ocean. And they have to do this in-flight system too before they get to be approved for sending their crew. Their first crew will only consist of two people going up to the International Space Station. But again, eventually, once they do their mission, dock with the space station, come back, you know, the test crew is back safely on both vehicles, then NASA will start to put these vehicles into rotation. Like I said, SpaceX has, you know, three ready to go, spacecraft, more to follow. And they're reusable, so they come back to be able to set up a system for sending crews up to the space station without the Russians. Russians, of course, like, I think they're up to $85 million a seat now, where SpaceX and Boeing probably do this probably for $20, $25 million a seat. And most importantly, it's, you know, launched by U.S. rockets, U.S. Spacecraft. I mean, that's the most important thing. This is WS2N. Any comments or questions? Okay, Dick asked about the next launch I'm watching. The next launch I'm watching is October 9th, a couple days from now, 3 days out. It's the ICON satellite that's going to be launched. All about the ionosphere, you know, which is ham radio world as far as I'm concerned. They're going to study that ionosphere. They're going to study it to death with this thing. They've been trying to get it up for a little over 2 years into orbit. They tried from Kwajalein Island a while back. They were going to launch from Vandenberg, California, and then they wound up at Kwajalein Island down in the Pacific, in the equator. They have launch facilities there. Problems with the, not with the satellite, but with the Pegasus rocket. Pegasus rocket is a rocket that's bolted to the bottom wing of a Lockheed L-1011, you know, essentially a superjet, Lockheed's version of the 747. And they successfully launched like over 40 of these rockets over the years. But for some reason, they had a number of problems trying to get this one to launch. They come back, land in a runway, and then they lost their window. And next thing you know, they said, let's launch from Florida. So this one's going to launch from Florida. Yeah, it'll probably take off on the shuttle runway. That's my guess. I haven't heard that yet, though, but I'm sure that's probably what they're going to do. I think the shuttle runway is like 3 miles long. And they'll go out over the Atlantic Ocean. They're going to be pointing in the 28-degree inclination. That's where this one's going to be launched. And hopefully they'll get this thing up. It will work with the GOLD satellite. The GOLD satellite is another satellite that's looking at the ionosphere, but from a geosynchronous location. So the two of them will work together. That was the plan a couple of years ago. It's delayed, and finally it looks like they're going to be able to get this thing into orbit. You know, it's not a satellite. It weighs like a little less than 700 pounds. But the idea is to get this thing to orbit. And they're going to launch on this Pegasus XL launch vehicle, which is, I think it's like a three-stage solid booster. It's like a solid fuel rocket, three-stage. So hopefully it works out good. Any comments or questions on this topic? This is WS2N. Okay. Vehicle that I was talking about there, the rocket Pegasus, that's been around over 10, 15 years, has changed ownership. You know, orbital science used to be launching this thing. Then it went to, then they changed names to Orbital ATK. They got involved with ATK, the firearms company. And then eventually they got bought up by Northrop Grumman. So this is a Northrop Grumman launch now. But Northrop Grumman, as far as this type of launch vehicle, it has now got competition. Virgin Galactic, you know, this Richard Branson guy poured billions of dollars into the space program. He's presently trying to complete his spacecraft that will eventually send 8 people to suborbital space. He also has this Launcher 1 system, which is very similar to the Pegasus. Instead of using an outdated Lockheed L-1011, he's using the an actual 747. You know, he used to have, you know, he had Virgin Airlines, so he has access to 747s. Took one of them, put a name on it, he called the Cosmic Girl, and he's going to be launching Launcher 1 rockets. That's what he calls them. It looks as big as Pegasus. I'm not sure if they're the same size. Pegasus is almost 60 feet long, but same idea. And he's very close to launching his first rocket within probably a month or two, I think. And then if that's successful, you know, I don't think he has a satellite on that one, but if that's successful, he's got contracts already lined up to launch these, in this case, low orbit flights, probably 500, 600 pound payloads to orbit. So you call that Launcher 1. And that's the deal on that. Any comments or questions? This is WS1. Nothing heard. And one other quick topic. This is going to happen a ways down the road, but this company called Intuitive Machines, they now have a contract to launch their Nova C spacecraft. It's a lander that will eventually land on the moon. They now have a contract to use the Falcon 9 rocket to do that. So I think that's going to happen in 2021, probably 2 years down the road. We'll have the first private company hopefully successfully land on the moon. Then they have bigger rockets that lined up in the future. This Nova C has actually got a contract now to do it, which is good to see. And hopefully somebody makes it. The last two have not been successful. The last one was by India. And that was the Vikram landed. It was land, and then it had another rover on board. Of course, they never got to use that because either this thing landed and they can't find it, or it crashed. But to make a long story short, they lost communications at 2.1 kilometers above the lunar surface. So that forces India off the list. They'll try again. The whole mission was called Chandrayaan. So Chandrayaan 3, I'm sure, will be a couple of years down the road from now. But the company before that, or country that failed on landing on the moon was was Israel. They tried, gave it a shot back in April, and their lander eventually failed. They believe it hit the lunar surface at around 400 or 500 miles an hour. I heard the thing turned 180 degrees the wrong way, and then the engine lit that was supposed to be slowing it down. And I think it just, you know, if that's true, that ended their mission. And last I heard, they don't have a plan on doing another one. India will, but I think Israel is off the list for now. Unless they can raise some money. I think that would cost them $170 million. Any questions or comments to this portion of the net? This is WS2N for the SpaceNet report.
Paul, when it comes to the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, and I think you're saying most of those 8 pumps are going to be replaced, what's the best guess as to when that will be back in operation? That sounds like a 1 week repair procedure. Go ahead.
Oh, it's going to be pretty longer than that. Like I said, there's 10 EVAs coming up, 10 spacewalks. They got 5 scheduled for these batteries that have to be changed out, and then the next 5 will be dedicated to the AMS. And if that's scheduled right now, the end of 3 months, you know how sometimes things are delayed. I'm going to guess, you know, you're going to have to wait 4 months probably before that thing gets back online. And they have to do some testing, I'm sure, you know, realign everything. Although maybe not. But, you know, the thing has never actually been offline. It's still operating with one pump intimately. Back to you, Dick.
So 10 EVAs, that sounds very significant, because I think each EVA, you've got 2 people out there, a buddy system. Each time you do an EVA, the spacesuit, you have to check all the seals, all the valves, charge the space pack for the batteries and the compressed air. You got to do that on 10 EVAs, which is 20 spacesuits being returned to confirmed operating procedure during each EVA. It rolls off the tongue easily, but the number of things that can go wrong with a spacesuit, and a good significant number of those things that can go wrong can become lethal. So those 10 EVAs got to be spaced out over an awful long time, because to confirm a spacesuit is in good operating order before you reuse it, I'll bet you that's a lengthy procedure. Over to you, Paul, K2RIW.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, when you watch the live transmission from NASA, sometimes they're in there for hours on end, you know, getting ready to just get out. But different, you know, they have different torsos, different legs, and they're configured to different people. Luca Pamatama, you know, from Italy, he's taller. Women are shorter. I think Hank is around the same size as women. So, you know, they have all this figured. And so sometimes they'll change out the spacesuit pieces, you know. The arm links, it's a whole different deal. And, with 10 spacewalks, that's a big deal. And then there's another spacewalk going in there for the year for the Russians. But they go out a different airlock, you know, on the Russian side. We go out on the to the Quest lab, you know, attached to Unity on the port on the starboard side is the Quest lab, and you go inside that, and you go in there usually with 3 people, 2 spacewalkers, and 1 guy that's going to get everybody ready, and he helps out, prepares them, and then they go into another room, which is going to be the room which they will actually exit, and you know, 2 rooms apart of the Quest lab. And actually, it's a much smaller room. And again, that person will help them, you know, get, you know, darn everything together. Helmets, pressure check, test. And then that person leaves. And he's still there with them, of course. And he stays up the whole time. And he closes that, looks like a garage door type setup, and seals that tight. And then they bring the temperature, the pressures down, the proper pressures. And eventually they open up the outer door, and off they go. When they open the door, it's looking down. So they say it's a funny feeling on doing the first spacewalk. It's like, I'm going to leave this thing. I'll just drop like a rock right down to Earth. You know, I've heard that story before. Back to you, Dick.
I'm guessing each spacewalk is 4, 5, 6 hours long. Every 90 minutes, the space shuttle, the International Space Station, makes a complete loop around the Earth. So for 45 minutes, you're in the sunshine. For 45 minutes, you're in the dark. And I know that Story Musgrove had a problem that during the 45 minutes in the dark, his hands got so cold that he got frostbite on his fingertips. I wonder what they do to avoid that nowadays. And so each of these spacewalks for 4, 5, 6 hours, that in itself is quite significant. We're getting down to a couple of minutes left. Back to you, Paul. KQIW.
Yeah, sometimes they go out for 7 hours, you know. But yeah, 5, 6, 7. A lot of them are, like you said, 6 hours or so. But they can go longer. And if need be, if something wasn't done, they can come back to the airlock, recharge, and go back out again. Finish up if they have to do it. But they haven't done that on any of the ones I've watched. I remember they did it. They might have done it with Hubble, or I don't know, one of the missions. They recharged it. That was in the space shuttle. But yeah, there you go. We'll cover more of the EVA in the weeks and months to come. All the other things that are going on. So I'll turn it back to Dick for the final, and over to Roy as well. All I can say is go Limock, go TechNet, back to WS.
When they say they recharge, do they recharge batteries or air? What got recharged, Paul?
Oh, air. They have valves in there. They could hook up to it and recharge the system. Add air, you know.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Roy, do you want to reissue your addresses? AC2GS, K2RIW.
Dick, I never turn down an opportunity. Once again, to everyone listening, to anyone listening, if you have any mailbag questions that you would like to ask Dick, but you can't get on the repeater, if you have any topics you would like me to particularly cover, like N2EO mentioned the little black hole that might be at the edge of our solar system, or if you have any refutations, if you think that my theory of relativity, or Albert's theory of relativity, is hogwash, feel free. The email address, as always, is mailbag@ac2gs.com. That's my call sign. mailbag@alphacharlie2golfsierra.com. And the article that I did mention, and some pictures from NASA that Paul wanted me to post, are available on my website at roy.ac2gs.com. So once again, want to thank Dick and Paul for the opportunity, and everyone who participated tonight, and I hope that I'll be able to come up with another puzzler by next Sunday. And for those people observing, I wish you all to have an easy fast this week. So thank you very much, and this is AC2GS, and I'll be clear now.
Bye-bye, Paul. Roy, thank you. So, that was the TechNet for this week. 73 you all. See you all next week. K2RIW and the TechNet, we're clear.
And Dick, that one picture you wanted to see about Mars, Elon Musk version of vision of a colony on Mars with his rockets and his building with people walking around with shirt sleeves on, is on Roy's website right now. I had trouble sending the email to you before. Back to you, Dick.
Thank you, Paul. And but I finally did get those pictures from you. I just didn't open my my email correctly. And to feed people on Mars, to have sustainability food production, 2,500 calories a day. That's a serious problem as I see it. Bye-bye. K2RIW, clear.
Good night from the W2VL repeater. at tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. At tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. W2V. That's tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m. This is the W2VL repeater. That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
W2SET is listening.
W2VL repeater.
W2SET is listening.
Hello, Peter. W2SET and Subio. It's been the dog's age. How are you?
Good morning, Rich. W2EO. How are you doing? It's been quite a while. I haven't been on the repeater too much, so that's why you haven't heard me. And I was trying to get over to W2KPQ, but it doesn't seem to be logged in. I don't know if you know what's going on over there. But have you been, Rich? Been fine. Health has been good and steady. And how have you been feeling? How's everything with you?
I'm doing good, Peter. By the way, it's John W2.